You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north on a Friday morning, November 14th, 2025. I'm Pat Kreitlow here in Chippewa Falls. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. Our Week in Review panel is standing by as well. Our question of the day comes from our Up North News daily newsletter, our Friday Locals Love section. Locals love their local ice cream shop. So who do you want to give a shout out to next time folks are in town and saying they'd like a sundae or a cone? You can use that Civic Media app to send us a text message. You can get in the comment sections of YouTube or Facebook. And of course, you can text us at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. All right, a little shift in things now on Fridays. By popular demand, the Week in Review panel is starting a few minutes earlier here, so we appreciate coming to the program at this early hour of a Friday morning. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and journalist Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze. And lest I forget, Mark Jacob over at StopThePresses.News has an article, How News Coverage Eases Us Into Tyranny. We're going to talk a bit about that. Jennifer Schulze has Indistinct Chatter on Substack. Search for @NewsJennifer. And Mr. Santel can be heard Saturday mornings live at 9 a.m. with Amicus, a law review, replayed on Sunday mornings across the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning, all.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Nice to have you all here. Mark, we're gonna start with journalism and the way that it used to do, what's the word I'm looking at? Facts. Facts were really cool.
Oh, I remember
and,
those.
Yeah, I know. So novel. And would be merciless on politicians who did not respect the truth. This is an official post from the White House Twitter account. It says, tariff revenues smash records, slashing the U.S. deficit by over 25%, shrinking government spending, downsizing bloated bureaucracy, and unleashing a wave of American jobs. And give Twitter this much credit. They now have the community notes section where people note the deficit was not slashed by 25%. It was at best 2%. And then it gives some other fact checking as well. But, this was put up by somebody who has a little experience in journalism and politics and says, I'm used to spin and rhetorical sleights of hand, but I will never get used to presidents and White Houses completely fabricating data that anyone can look up and check. I'm old enough to remember when policy staff would resign rather than participate in falsifying data. Weren't those good times, Mark?
Yeah, maybe when people, you didn't have professional liars as press secretaries. I mean, when they realized that their job was to provide information for the American people rather than lie for a would-be dictator. It really does disturb me that the news media in general, mainstream media, seems to have really accepted the idea that the president lies all the time. And that's just not news anymore. You know, it's just, put him on TV, let him lie, and then go on to something else. And I would love to see a rule in media organizations that every time they broadcast a lie by somebody, they have to fact check it. If they're not going to fact check it, they can't broadcast it. And if that was an internal policy, we would be much better served by the media.
Which, Jennifer, that's just what you do. And now it's just kind of excused by saying Trump says blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Rather than Trump falsely says or anything like that.
You hit on a key point there, Pat. The rules have changed. Mm-hmm. I would say it's the Trump rule. As long as it has those two words in front of it, Trump says, journalists and their news organizations can sort of back off from more traditional reporting, right? Mm-hmm. We've done our job, Trump says. Now you should know, audience, that means it might not be true, but we're not going to wade in too heavily on that. We're going to let you figure it out. Oh boy.
Right. But you see this, you know, Jim Santel, even in the courts, we have talked about this when the administration has made claims either before the Supreme Court or at lower court levels. And they are bringing cases against people like, you know, Jim Comey and others. And judges are essentially calling them out now and saying there's nothing there on which you can base a case. It's become a regular part of our court system as well.
So many illustrations of that. Even just yesterday in a district court presided over by a judge named Cameron Curry, she is brought in connection with the Comey and Letitia James prosecutions, a combined hearing. The judge is trying to get to the bottom of whether or not the interim U.S. attorney has the authority to bring this case. And she's asking about what's going on in the grand jury. They're missing minutes, that sort of thing. And the judge plainly is heading down the road, probably stunningly, but appropriately, maybe dismissing these cases. And along the way, when the judge identifies some of these problems, the attorney for your Justice Department says to her, well, all of this was just a paperwork error. And that doesn't go over well with the judge. That may not be an out and out lie, but it's awfully darn close. It's just the latest example, once again, of in the courts, as you just said, Pat, we are also just making things up, misrepresenting what's going on, and not being honest and simply saying, you know what, this was not done well, but it doesn't rise to the level, for example, of a dismissal status here. Instead, we just make things up. But judges are indeed, including the judge yesterday, identifying these problems and saying, not in my courtroom.
Or if instead of a line, we're just lowering the bar, and how much lower can we get than Megyn Kelly yesterday talking about the Epstein case and, you know, these rumors that Donald Trump may have been involved with teenage girls. And Megyn Kelly's view is, well, yeah, they're 15. It's not like they were 8. I mean, Mark, It's not like they were 8 is not a campaign slogan I would want to run on.
Right. And it's, well, we're not sure it's, you know, child molestation because it's someone 15. So, you know, so that's, you know, okay. I mean, frankly, you know, obviously that is statutory rape. And, you know, even if there's supposed consent, there's no such thing as consent with children.
Right.
So what are you talking about? But she's, you know, I mean, this is a prominent person, Megyn Kelly, trying to apologize for Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, in order to somehow help Trump to where his, you know, his best friend who was raping children isn't so bad because he was only raping 15-year-olds, not 5-year-olds. I mean, she says it really that plainly. She said, go back and look at it, audience. It's insane what she's saying and how she's trying to justify the molestation of children.
And Jennifer, I know we've talked about this before, and we don't know exactly who did what. And so I'm hesitant to bring up people like Bill Clinton or Bill Gates or anybody else. But let's just say whoever it is, for the record, if it is a Bill Clinton or Bill Gates, we don't care. They should be prosecuted too. So why do we have a president who, for somebody who claims he has nothing to hide, working so hard to hide the details?
Well, Pat, because the details are really ugly for him. That's the only takeaway I think by now we can have, right? I mean, my understanding of what was released this week were still not the Epstein files, but emails provided by his estate to the Democrats on the Oversight Committee. So we are still minus, you know, a lot of information. And let's just, I think, agree that the information that came out this week was pretty gross. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine, you know, what else is hiding in those files.
No. And so we now have, we saw the release of emails, Jim, but, and again, I know you work mostly with courts rather than Congress, but I'm sure you've been following the note that there are now enough signatures on a discharge petition in the House of Representatives that would force a vote where the House could compel the Department of Justice to release everything that it has after redacting things like victims' names and such, and stop holding them, stop covering them up. Jim, I guess, am I explaining that right? And even if the House were to vote, I would imagine that Trump's Department of Justice would still have some delay tactics they try to put in place.
Well, absolutely, Patty. I think you've got it just right. Again, I'm not a congressional expert, but that's my understanding. And it once again raises a couple of points. One is that the Department of Justice has these materials, could do it tomorrow, could release it tomorrow. The positive thing about this is, look, the United States Congress is exercising some oversight. That's what it's supposed to do. Wow, isn't that different, right? Admittedly, in this high visibility matter. And second, the follow-up question, kind of a variation on what you just suggested, is the president gets a directive now, a legal directive from the Congress. What's to stop him from simply saying, Pam, don't comply. Don't do this. And again, she gets hauled before. Maybe she gets found in contempt. Maybe. But this is the constitutional crisis we are in when one branch of government says you've got to do this to another branch. And the answer is no. And this could be another one of those situations if indeed, as both Mark and Jennifer are indicating, those files are so incendiary, it's worth it to suffer contempt rather than to have this released in the public domain for all time. Who knows what's going to happen, but a lot of lessons coming out of what's happening right now.
So Mark, do you feel like there's momentum that builds for more things to be released that we haven't seen yet? Or are we just due for another round of delays and people will just throw up their hands and walk away?
Well, I guess I'm encouraged by the fact that this is still an issue, because in the whole time Trump has been, a politician, last decade, he has done horrible things, the McCain stuff, the making, fun of a, disabled person. I mean, there's a long line of stuff that he's done that's just been a 1 day, 2 day, 3 day story. So this is really sticking to him, and it should, because it's horrible and any decent person would be appalled by this. And I don't know how much more is going to happen in Congress, because, or they'll have a vote and they'll say, they should release the Epstein files. Then it'll go to the Senate. That'll be interesting to make Senator Thune look like the bad guy then, because they'll probably try to put a brick on it and make it go nowhere in the Senate. And if that happens, and Trump could veto it too. So I don't think that you're going to get, you're going to get a bill passed in Congress or a resolution or whatever that says, hey, this has got to happen. But it's going to, keep on being talked about. I mean, nobody thinks that this is, if you look at the polls, it's 75% or 80% of people say that the Epstein file should be released. And this and Republicans are saying it too. So this is not, it's not going to go away, and it shouldn't go away. And it needs to dog him for forever until he does this. Because, and the other good thing about it is that all the other horrible sexual things that Trump has done, all the predatory behavior, it reminds people of all of that too.
And Jennifer, that becomes part of the focus of journalists' work, is not to get caught up in the X's and O's of politics, but to keep focus on right versus wrong.
And I think we've seen that throughout the coverage of the Epstein files. I mean, it rises to everybody's covering it in weeks like this, but there has been steady coverage throughout of this story. Like Mark said, it's one of those things that thankfully is not a one and done, because Trump has successfully manipulated the media to move on to the very next thing and not dig into so many things that he's done. And this is one of those where there are people that are not going to let it go. They're just not.
No, and nor should they. Jennifer Schulze has Indistinct Chatter on Substack. Mark Jacob has the Stop the Presses newsletter. And Jim Santel is the host of Amicus on the Civic Media Radio Network. He'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. A reminder, we've got plenty of sports this weekend as well. You've got the Badger football team playing at Indiana. Coverage begins tomorrow at 9 a.m. And the Packers play the New York Giants. Coverage begins 10 a.m. on Sunday. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
So many questions. We are so full of questions for you at Up North News. You can sign up for a daily newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com, filled with Wisconsin features. Today is Locals Love, the section that talks about what you like to see in your hometown and what you like to brag about. This week it is about local ice cream shops. And then on Sundays, my newsletter with more of a political bent has a question of the week. And that question this week has been about bipartisan legislation that would legalize marijuana use in Wisconsin. Do you support that? Do you feel it should remain, you know, mostly illegal? Do you feel like there's some middle ground for medicinal purposes? If you want to be among the first to see our question of the week, then sign up for our Sunday morning newsletter. And you can do all that, by the way, at our new webpage, upnorthnewswi.com/mornings. Let me say that again, upnorthnewswi.com/mornings. And you can get to my website stories. You can get links to subscribe to the show on Spotify or Apple, or watch us on YouTube, upnorthnewswi.com/mornings. All right, let's roll back to our Week in Review panel here with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, as well as Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob. Jennifer and Mark have covered news in the Chicago area, of course, for a long time. Other folks who have covered the news in Chicago for a long time and have since retired have penned a letter to the editor. And Jennifer, this really caught my eye, this letter to the editor in the Chicago Tribune, signed by, I didn't get the final count, somewhere like a dozen different Chicago journalists who have all said, look, we're retired, but you know, you've trusted us before, you should trust us now. Having the military in the streets is not normal, and we should not normalize this.
It's a group of broadcast journalists. I worked with most of them, and many of them are my friends and former colleagues, who were so motivated by what's going on here in Chicago that they did something I think is really rather unusual for a group of journalists to come out of retirement and say, you know, trust us, this is really bad. I've talked to quite a few of them since then, and to a person, they're just so horrified about what is happening in Chicago, and they love Chicago so much. And I will also say many of them, if not all of them, are marquee names in Chicago broadcast journalism
that have enormous
credibility and respect from the community. And so when they say, you need to pay attention to this, I think I think people are already paying attention, but this, I think, just adds to that.
I mean, the names that jumped out for me, Ron Majors, Carol Marine, Tom Skilling, Chris Bury, who people know from ABC News, Walter Jacobson, Sherman Kaplan, on and on. Mark, let me read an excerpt of it and then get your thoughts, where they write, please trust us now when we say that what is happening in the Chicago area is wrong. Let us be clear. We support the lawful apprehension and deportation of undocumented immigrants with criminal records. The president says he's after the worst of the worst, but that's not what's happening. It's gone way beyond that. People are presumed guilty until proven innocent. That's not law enforcement. It's terror. This dragnet seems to be based on racism and is snaring citizens of color, documented immigrants, and people who have committed no serious crimes. Your neighbor, friend, coworker, babysitter, and landscaper, people whose work ethic and honesty have contributed to the city for years. And Mark, I know that there's still plenty of, you know, President Trump supporters in Chicago, but I dare say I think these people are speaking for the vast majority of Chicagoland residents.
I know they are. And the thing, this whole terrorizing people in Chicago by the masked armed thugs of Homeland Security has, I think, unified Chicago in a lot of ways. Granted, I'm sure there are some people who, you know, are, you know, cheering this on, but not the people I'm talking to, and not my neighbors. I mean, people are more angry at the Trump regime than ever before about this. And you're seeing, Pat, you see these journalists, by the way, this is not the kind of thing they do. And they treasure being objective about things. So them coming out with an opinion is just, it goes against their nature, but they felt compelled to do it because of the horrors they're seeing. You know, tear gassing people, dragging a daycare worker out of, you know, in school and stuff like that. I mean, they've just been so many horrible incidents that they just were appalled. And in Chicago, you're seeing a lot of civic groups, civic leaders who normally wouldn't get involved in anything that looked like politics, coming out and stating that they just cannot stand this. So the only good thing about this is that it's been a unifying moment for Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Jim, there's so much legally we could talk about this, about, you know, whether the president has the power to do this and so forth. What I'm especially interested, though, in is the folks who are documented and or are citizens who have been arrested and detained. Are we going to see, it might be post-Trump, but are we going to see years of litigation where these folks can sue for some kind of damages? Or is any citizen who's like rounded up by these folks, are they going to have no legal recourse and this is just where we are right now?
The answer is yes, and yes, they should be pursuing these kinds of claims. There is a thing of still in America called false arrest. If you're out there making an arrest based upon a lack of probable cause, other bases for doing those kinds of things. The difficulty, of course, is you need to go into a federal court, maybe a state court, to get those interests vindicated. Beyond that, we know that there are broader issues here. And again, the Supreme Court making decisions like this stunning decision coming out of Los Angeles when there's a judge named Mame Frimpong who says, you got to have a reasonable suspicion before you can arrest people. Can't just detain people because of the color of their skin. And what does our Supreme Court say? Supreme Court says we're reversing that. We're pulling that back. We don't know exactly what the new standard is, but some real mixed messages, candidly, from the Supreme Court, not from other courts, not from the district court judges right there in Chicago, but the Supreme Court telling people, well, maybe in fact, some of this law enforcement stuff and the outrages that we're seeing, maybe, just maybe it's okay. That has a chilling effect on people who would otherwise go into court and say, I want to push back on this.
And let's be clear, the mixed message is coming from the Constitution versus what these justices are saying. Okay, there's no mixed message from the Constitution, but other people who are mixing it up. And it's a conversation we are going to continue with Jennifer Schulze, Mark Jacob, and Jim Santel. Coming up on the other side of the Midwest Farm Report here and more, I'm Pat Kreitler from Up North News. Again, sign up for our newsletters at upnorthnewswi.com. Follow us on social media at upnorthnewswi. We'll be back here up north. Nice to have you back here at 7:35 on this Friday morning. Our Week in Review panel is here. Jennifer Schulze, Mark Jacob, and Jim Santel, a former U.S. attorney. And let's talk about name changes. Some name changes, you know, they're rather benign. You've got Up North News Radio that becomes Mornings with Pat Kreitler. All right, vanity project. You've also got, you've got the ones that are kind of useless. Is anybody next week going to be referring to watching a program on MS Now?
No.
Because tomorrow it won't be MSNBC anymore. And again, personal opinion only. One of the dumbest name changes that I've seen in the media in the recent past. And then
why do you think that, Pat?
Because the MS in MSNBC stood for Microsoft. It was originally a partnership between Microsoft and NBC. Microsoft has long since left the partnership. Why leave the MS in there? And why now? Now is one of those cliche things. Jennifer, back me up on this, broadcast cliches. You know, the news now. Everything is now.
Breaking news.
Live.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
The future is now.
Yes.
Listen, I live in Chicago, as you know, where the Sears Tower will always be the Sears Tower.
It'll always
Tower.
Be the Sears Tower.
I don't
Tower.
Care how
yes.
many times
and,
they want
and
to
And the John Hancock building from Milwaukee. I always still refer to it as the John Hancock building.
It's the Sears Tower. It will always be MSNBC. They can dance around with different things. They should have, though, done a better job with a better name.
Yes.
That's
just my 2 cents. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I bring up the name changes because of the metaphor of the week is the way social media has jumped all over Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, because it's still the Department of Defense, but having a big ceremony as he put the screws into a sign that changes the Department of Defense to the Department of War. And Mark, the metaphors were wonderful. Just the uselessness of, or it really is a metaphor for the Trump administration, changing the name on something, changing the sign out front, but everything else is still the same.
Right, right. I actually feel, I'm going to be contrarian today. I actually feel like it makes a difference that they call it the War Department because defense means that you actually are only going to fight somebody if you're protecting yourself. And the War Department really makes it, is more on brand if you're going to blow up, you know, fishermen in the Caribbean, or you're going to attack Nigeria over attacks against Christians there. And so I think, I mean, the weird thing is that Trump like campaigned on the fact that he didn't want to go into wars, but since he's been president, he seems to be really into war. I mean, he's been threatening everyone. He wants to attack Greenland. I mean, you name it, he wants to attack it.
Well, Jennifer, that takes us right into a headline in this morning's New York Times I wanted to ask you about. The headline, this is so classic Times. America first? Some Trump supporters worry that's no longer the case. President Trump has been dining with billionaires and has taken a keen interest in crises overseas, leading to fears that he is drifting away from his more populist stances. I'm shocked, Jennifer. Shocked. To read
shocked
that the guy
there's
that,
billionaires in the room. Shocked.
That there's billionaires and he's looking out for them and foreign crises and is not living up to the guy who originally promised in 2015 that only he could tame Wall Street and make it work for the American people. I'm not asking this from a Trump standpoint. I'm asking from a New York Times standpoint. Are they ever going to get tired of looking like they've been bamboozled?
Well, what's funny to me about it is that the Trump administration part two began with him surrounded by billionaires.
Yes.
And almost 11 months later, the Trump or the New York Times is saying, oh, people are noticing. I'm sorry. What? You know, the billionaires have been there from the start. They're a critical role. You know, I'm not sure I agree with the framing about that story. I would just say here's more of the same. You know, it was always a scam. You know, he always was going to hang with the rich guys.
Well, Jim Santel, give him this much credit. The one thing where he has stood up for what he promised was when he said, I will be your vindication. Oh. And he has most assuredly weaponized the Justice Department to its utmost at this point.
Right. Retribution is his word. We know about these other investigations, presumably heading toward prosecutions, maybe by another U.S. attorney that could or could not have the authority to do this. But we've seen that again from Capitol Hill, obviously the Comey and the Letitia James, and frankly, even the John Bolton prosecutions muddied by this notion that, again, there may in fact be a crime there. But the difficulty is when you end up on the president's enemies list, how do you know if it's selective prosecution, vindictive prosecution, or if there's something legitimate? And that's the big takeaway in all this retribution stuff, which is he has undermined now the whole concept of the grand jury. What do we know about whether or not these are real cases? We don't. And again, times of Trump, justice slips away.
So there's never been a more important time for storytelling and journalism that is, you know, that is unbowed and does its work without fear or favor. And yet, Mark, you've got a picture of a boiling frog on the article, How News Coverage Eases Us Into Tyranny. You can get Mark's column at stopthepresses.news. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about how slowly but surely we're being eased into this, you know, tyranny or dictatorship. And the news media are helping us along to this horrible path by normalizing things, by deciding that, you know, that some crypto billionaire giving a ton of money to the Trump family and then getting a pardon is the normal thing that might, you know, happen in any normal times when it's just not. You know, a video, an AI video of Trump dropping feces on a crowd of Americans. Well, you know, that's just a one day story these days. And the media are normalizing and things and not they're easing us into it. And this made me think about the metaphor about the frog. And that old metaphor goes that if you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, he'll jump out. If you put a frog into a regular water that's not boiling and slowly raise it to boiling, he'll be boiled to death and he won't jump out. Well, the thing about that is experts have said that's not true at all. You know, the frogs jump out. I mean, it's just, come on, frogs are. And my question in my newsletter is, are the news media as smart as frogs or not quite?
Well, that is definitely one way of putting it, because you've got newsrooms that, again, they have free will as journalists, but also as, let's face it, a business model and maybe even an ideology. And where I'm going with this, Jennifer, is the fact that you've got right-wing media that are very selectively covering things or not covering things. The latest Epstein files, you know, have been on plenty of other channels, but you won't see it on right-wing cable.
You know, Reuters, the news agency, has a branch of it called the Reuters Foundation, and they did a big dive into the state of American media, and they released it this week, and they said the myth of the liberal media is a myth. It's gone and dead, but that the American media is dominated by right-wing media now. And they went through all the things that we talk about all the time, you know, the Ellisons buying CBS and all of that. And that right-wing media is overwhelmingly almost 1,000% in Trump's camp and will do, they all follow the same storyline. And they did that this week with Epstein, but they'll do it on everything. You know, to Mark's point about the boiling frog, there just aren't that many regular newsrooms left. You know, the billionaires have captured most of the mainstream media in America. And then this week, Rupert Murdoch's reporting that he's going to open a newspaper in California, like the New York Post, they're going to have the California Post. So they are increasing their footprint across the country. And it's so worrisome. And we can already see, obviously, the damage from it.
And it doesn't even stop at our borders, Mark. We've got now Trump, you know, threatening the BBC, which, you know, did bend a little, but is certainly far from breaking in Trump's favor.
Yeah, the BBC, they did kind of selectively edit quotes from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not like they're blameless, but it shouldn't have. I mean, this kind of thing, this kind of sloppy editing of somebody in the news has happened forever, you know, and usually the newsmaker will just kind of laugh it off and just move on. You know, Trump doesn't do that because he wants the news media to be very scared of him. And in this case, the BBC has issued an apology, but they've refused to pay him any money. And he's threatening to sue them because, you know, because he really wants the news media to pay him money, both because he's greedy and also because that's a symbol of their surrender to him.
And Jim Santel's a former U.S. attorney. You know, there was an interview with Attorney General Pam Bondi, and a quote that really stuck out was something like, well, yes, we've been dealt a lot of setbacks in the court, but eventually it'll all get to the Supreme Court and everything will be all right. Is essentially her way of saying the Supreme Court has been bought and paid for. And that just has to, I mean, it's an intentional chilling effect for anybody that still is an independent voice in the judiciary.
It sure is. And she is announcing what John Roberts has basically accomplished in the past 10 months. We know that on this emergency shadow docket, 23, 24 cases where Donald Trump runs to the Supreme Court and says, stop those lower courts from doing that crazy stuff that they're doing. In fact, it's upholding the Constitution. And for the most part, the Supreme Court has said, yeah, we'll do just that. So I'm loath to agree with the Attorney General, but factually, there is a basis for saying that. We see that again just this past week, Donald Trump running back to the Supreme Court in a case being represented again by the Department of Justice. This is the E. Jean Carroll thing, right? That's back in the news. He is appealing the $5 million judgment. There's another case involving tens more millions of dollars out there. And this is the defamation lawsuit. And he's hoping that the same Supreme Court that Pam Bondi talked about just this past week will also look at that, which is basically a private civil matter, and we'll say, yes, it's Donald Trump, so we're going to overturn that too. I don't think they're going to take the case. I don't think they're going to do that. But the fact that he goes there supports this notion that you've got a safe haven at the highest court in our land.
Let's wrap up with the government shutdown coming to an end. And Mark and Jennifer, you've got, of course, Dick Durbin, a senator from Illinois, who is central to this deal. And so I could ask this many different ways, but looking at the standalone vote that'll come on the Affordable Care Act premium supports and things like that, whatever happened this week, from a Democratic point of view, is this going to be a case of losing the battle but winning the war? Mark? Sorry, Jennifer, you are ready to go. Go ahead, Jennifer.
You know, here's what I think about it. I think the mistake was actually the not amplifying loudly enough the political reality that the Republicans had already voted to do this, and they were loath to undo the subsidy cuts. And I think leaving the country and leaving Democrats and their supporters with the mistaken notion that it was fixable was political malpractice. Donald Trump has made it one of his singular goals since he first came on the scene to get rid of Obamacare. The idea that any Republicans were going to jump across the aisle and support bringing back those subsidies, I think was, they should have done a better job of talking to the country about it.
Okay. And Mark?
Yeah, I feel like that right now we need fighters, not folders. And I've been disappointed in Durbin that way. I think Durbin acts like he's a senator in the 1990s, you know, when there actually was such a thing as bipartisanship and collegiality. Right now, we've got a very dangerous criminal element in the White House and in Congress. I mean, Mike Johnson does whatever Trump says. Mm-hmm. And I think that the goal of Democrats needs to be obstruction, needs to stop them from doing terrible things.
Yeah. Mark Jacob, author of Stop the Press's newsletter, stopthepresses.news. Jennifer Scholze, look for her on Substack at News Jennifer. Jim Santel hosts Amicus. You can hear it tomorrow on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks to all of you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Good weekend, Pat. Take care.
All right. Dr. Kristen Lierley is joining us coming up, and Mike Clemens with sports. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Civic is the phone number, 855-752-4842. We have our Locals Love section in the Up North News daily newsletter on Fridays, and so that becomes our question here as well. Where's your favorite local ice cream joint? Next time you're passing through someplace, you might get a new idea of where to get a sundae or a cone. So put that in the comment sections of YouTube or Facebook, where you can watch us, or use that Civic Media app to call or text or leave a voice note for the show as well. Dr. Kristen Lierley here joins us along with our new executive producer, Frank Gargano. Thank you very much for all being here. Kristen, do you have a favorite ice cream place you like to go to?
Barra's Artisan Gelato.
Ah, yes, we have mentioned that before.
So good.
Have a favorite flavor?
All of them?
All of them? That's a fair question.
I'm that person who's like, I'm looking at the list and I'm like, mm-hmm. that one. Yeah, I know, because I want something. I want them all.
The heart wants what it wants.
It does.
So does the mouth and the tummy and everything else. Frank, your connections are more toward Chicagoland? Or if you're going to ask you a favorite local ice cream spot?
I'd say Margie's Candies in... I think it's in Logan Square of Chicago. I have to circle my car around the block like 20 times for an hour and have road rage just to go into the establishment, but it's well worth it because it's probably the best ice cream I've ever had in this country.
And Parker doesn't get the answer because we already know that he's just a few doors down from Kilwin's there on State Street in Madison.
I'm
which
not familiar.
Is...
You've never been to Kilwin's?
Oh my God, Parker.
Good Lord.
Does he live in a hole in the ground there? Could anybody check on Parker's home, where it is? Because look how defensive he is. He's just backed out like Homer into the bushes over here. All right. So here's your assignment today, Mr. Olson, is to go down State Street. There are just a few doors to Kilwin's where they have ice cream, but they also make fudge. They make all kinds of candy there.
I'm a big fudge guy.
You'll know it when you smell it. You go past it. And they're making, kettle corn and all kinds of stuff there. But,
all right.
Yeah, check out Kilwin's. By the way, another one up in Minocqua, and I know I'm missing another location or two. Anyway, I'm eating up all of Frank's time when he would normally give us some kind of a quiz. Did you bring one along today, Frank?
Yes, we do have one. It's another week in review quiz. So for everyone that didn't hear it last week, we're going to do a quiz based off of pop culture news that happened throughout the week. So it's going to be Pat versus Parker versus Dr. Kristen Lierley. Like last week, your name is your buzzer. So if you want to answer, Pat, you would have to say?
Pat.
Correct. Okay. Instead of just shouting out the answer, or else you'll be disqualified, and then Parker will message me later and
last week is still under protest.
Yes, it is.
All right. Let's get right into it. So the trailer for the new Super Mario Galaxy movie dropped this week. Comedian Jack Black is the voice of which Mario villain?
Parker.
Parker.
Bowser?
It is Bowser.
Okay. And when she sees this star, oh, ho, 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 wedding bells.
Well, what if she says no?
Then I will power up with this star and destroy the Mushroom Kingdom.
All right. Jack Black in his normal.
Yeah, that's a normal.
That's
yeah.
right.
He's not even playing around with that. All right.
I will say about that movie, it's perfect casting, except for maybe Chris Pratt, but he did great. Whoa, so right. Parker leads right now 1-0. On to the next question. Eminem, a.k.a. Slim Shady, just struck a deal with which NFL team to produce their annual Thanksgiving game? Kristen.
The Lions.
Oh, of course.
It is the Lions.
How am I
Who
missing
else?
This?
What's the other team that always does Thanksgiving Day games?
Dallas. The Cowboys?
It is the Cowboys. Yeah. But no point for that one. Right now, Dr. Lyerly and Parker are tied at 1. Your host, Pat, is yet to get
Stinkaroo.
On the board.
All right.
All right, on to the next one. Grammy nominations were released this past week. Which artist's
Kristen.
Album?
Pat, Annie Williams. No? Okay.
Kendrick.
Never mind.
Which artist's album, Man's Kristen. Best Friend, is up for Album of the Year? Kristen.
Not Andy Williams?
No, I'm wrong because I jumped ahead of the game and I really thought you were going to go with most Grammy nominations and it was going to be Kendrick Lamar,
it
but
was
that's
not.
Not right.
Do you know the answer?
No.
Man's Best Friend. Parker, this should be in your wheelhouse with your age demo.
Oh, good luck.
Oh, because I stick to my age demo so well. Yeah. Bad Bunny?
All right, I'm going to play the song. Let's see if this helps.
Oh, Sabrina Carpenter, Kristen,
What's
Sabrina
your name?
Carpenter.
Kristen, correct.
I like the assist, the audio assist. That's great.
That was helpful.
Yeah.
I like that song because it makes me, it validates my life.
Pat, you're not a huge Sabrina Carpenter fan? That
oh, no, I,
me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mind her a bit. No, she's fine.
No, she's
I don't
great.
Mind her.
Yeah, she's fine. But, you know, you're not going to remember her name in 5 years, but, you know, make the money.
Oh, my God, that's not
that's
true at all.
That's a hot take.
That's
oh, yeah, there have never been one-hit wonders. I'm that, sorry.
She has
she
many
have
hits. She has multiple.
There have been plenty of people who've been on the scene for, like, 2-3 years, and then suddenly it's like, well, whatever happened to them? Don't pretend
that's coming
that's
from
not
the guy
true.
Who doesn't even have a point yet. Dr. Lyerly with 2 points, Parker with 1, Pat yet to get on the board. We have time for just a few more. Fans of this competition show rejoiced when Andy Richter was voted off earlier this week. Here's the theme.
Pat, Dancing with the Stars.
Pat
there
is on
go.
The
Pat
board.
Is on the board. Yes,
hey, Dancing with the Stars fan. Pat Kreidlow.
No, I've never seen it. I scrolled past the news story about 4:30 this morning, and it takes a while for those neurons to fire up and remember that. So, all right, well, we need one quick tiebreaker here.
All right, one quick tiebreaker. Here we go. The White Stripes were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What is the name of this popular song?
Kristen.
Kristen.
Seven. Something, something.
Parker?
Parker?
Seven Nations Army?
Seven Nations Army is correct.
You're welcome, Parker.
Wow.
You might have said something else.
Yep. There. No, Parker, way to go.
Oh,
good
no, that was a tie. No.
It's a tie.
Oh, no.
We settle this next week.
Thank you, Parker.
At Kilwins.
Back, yes, exactly. Back with more with Dr. Lyerly after the news. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.